spanning south of Birmingham to the north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa to Gaston, with parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in for good measure. This is Ernie Yarbrough, Right Side Radio, filling in for Phil Williams. Coming to the second hour of our show here, the second of our Triple Dipper. And first hour, recovering sanity from the bottom up, grassroots, right? And now we're going to consider what was one of the most contentious topics, heavy, hard topics in this past session. Took some time for me to process, to think through, and was thankful to have help and support, prayer, and bouncing things off my dad and some other friends to walk through this issue during this past session. And that's the idea, concept, debate, discussion of pro-life, IVF, and equal protection, which we'll unpack that a little bit. Actually, this entire hour is such a huge topic, and it's so vitally connected to really how Republicans campaign. And one of the heart messages that you can guarantee, right, in Alabama at least, but generally speaking across the nation, is, hey, I'm pro-life, right? I gotta hold my gun in the picture. I'm gonna have a tractor behind me, right? I'm gonna have a picture of my family in church on these flyers. And by George, I'm going to hold a baby, and I'm pro-life, right? And so these are important things that – those are all things that are amazing, things I believe in. Like, I think we should be pro-life. I think we should be pro-Second Amendment. I think we should be pro-nuclear family. We should be pro-farming. We should be pro-decentralization and these amazing things that are part of the whoop and wharf, right, the history, the fabric of American society. But to unpack this issue of where are we exactly in the pro-life movement – and abortion and IVF, equal protection, like what's going on? Are babies safe? What's happening? What do we need to be doing? And how do we understand what just happened? I'm going to share a little bit of my story as a legislator from the inside scoop, what happened, and talk about that and unpack that, because, hey, you are our constituents and you deserve to know. And I have on the phone with me here today, I have on the line with me a lawyer who has become a friend of mine and a help in this process, very knowledgeable and very helpful on this topic to think through, because this is an incredibly principled position that you have to take, being truly pro-life from the moment of conception to natural cause of death. So Bradley Pierce, welcome to the show. Please take a minute, introduce yourself to the audience, let them know who you are, your background, some involvement with the Dobbs case, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you, Ernie. Thanks very much for having me on. It's a privilege to be with you. Yeah, I'm Bradley Pierce. I'm an attorney. Most important thing about me is I'm a Christian, and that makes up for being an attorney, hopefully, for all your listeners out there.
Well, but, we'll pray for you.
I need it.
I'm a politician, so I mean, we're kind of in the same boat.
That's right. Well, I'm president of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion, and we're abolitionists supporting the equal protection of the laws for preborn children. We believe we need to love our neighbors as ourselves. That's what God tells us. And so I'm involved with that from the legal side, from the legislative side, drafting legislation, helping legislators such as yourself and states across the country. And through my practice, I've also defend parental rights, and then also involved in a number of other, you know, gun rights, self-defense rights, a number of other liberty fronts that I've been involved with drafting legislation.
Yeah, so just a guy who believes in, you know, life begins at conception, Second Amendment, family matters, parents, nuclear family. I mean, these are a lot of things that are their bread and butter, yeah, would be, you know, perceived as bread and butter Republican platform issues, right? And so. Yeah. Take a minute and maybe explain a little bit of your connection to the Dobbs case and how you help with that.
Yeah, well, you know, the Dobbs case came out of Mississippi, but then as it worked its way up through the courts and to the Supreme Court, there was an opportunity for other folks to submit briefs, to, you know, what are called amicus briefs, friend of the court briefs, to argue and help argue why Roe versus Wade should be overturned. And so we submitted a brief on behalf of our organization and 20 state legislators and 20 other organizations, arguing two things. Number one, that Roe versus Wade does need to be overturned, which the court did do. There were 81 briefs, and but ours was one of only, I think, four briefs that actually made a second argument. It said not only does the court need to overturn Roe versus Wade, but it also needs to find, under the 14th Amendment, that from the moment of fertilization, that a fetus or embryo that is a person, because the 14th Amendment says no state shall deny to any person the equal protection of the laws. Mm. Well, we think that person begins at conception and fertilization, so the court should find that, and then that would then require all states to provide equal protection to protect babies with the same laws, you know, before they're born as after they're born. And unfortunately, the court on that, although they had a duty under the 14th Amendment to do that, they just kind of washed their hands of it and just said, you know, we're returning it to the people's representatives, as they said. And so that's kind of where things are now.
Hmm. So and we'll come back to that here and throughout this hour, because that very 14th Amendment was brought up in conversation on the floor of the State House during debate and discussion over IVF and the bill that was produced there. So it's a lot to unpack here, but let's take this one piece at a time, because it's really important that, you know, knowledge is power, knowledge really acted upon and understood, and that's what we got to make sure that we put all the chips out there on the table for the people to know and understand. Because it's our duty and it's our responsibility before God. So as we continue to unpack this whole discussion of pro-life, you know, post-Roe world. So, you know, when Roe was overturned, people are thinking, hey, all right, abortion's now done for. Right? It's illegal, right? And so you had trigger laws that went into effect in some states, and Alabama has considered one of the more stringent, anti-abortion laws that's now in effect. But before we get into that, like, what would you say? Talk about a little bit about the state of pro-life across the country, and connect that maybe to what happened a few years ago in Louisiana with this idea of equal protection, that we need to have legislation, right, that actually treats life from the moment of fertilization and conception, life from that to natural cause of death, is as precious, and, you know, as the hat I'm wearing, Imago Dei, image of God.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people, you know, now that Roe's been overturned, a lot of the pro-life movement, that's kind of was the target for 49 years before it happened. Mm. And so I think a lot of kind of your average pro-life person is now, you know, kind of thinks and maybe even being led to believe at the time, like, hey, that was the victory we're aiming for. That's been accomplished. Now, at least in 14 states where there's no more clinics because of the trigger bills, that, you know, a lot of pro-life organizations say are abortion-free. That, hey, now we don't have to worry about that issue here, right? Yeah, all those other states, we need to keep working there and trying to protect babies there. But at least in my state, you know, my conservative pro-life, you know, red state, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I can go look at the reported abortion numbers in my state and see that they're basically, you know, close to zero, you know, except for maybe abortions that they would count, you know, for life of the mother. But that's kind of where a lot of your average pro-life person kind of assumes that's what's going on. But unfortunately, there hasn't been as much of a victory as a lot of us, you know, have been led to believe, or a lot of us assumed after Roe's gone. Now, although there's not clinics in Alabama and 13 other states, that there are still, because of the pro-life laws that were written there, they're now, moms can still get the abortion pills and do self-managed abortions at home. So they can get the pills, order them to their house, and do the abortions at home, and that's going on in all 50 states. So really, for the mother, abortion is still completely legal in all 50 states because of that.
Wow. So you've got a situation where the reality is that, so basically, the life of the baby has no protections from the mother.
That's right. Yeah, every single one of these pro-life, you know, trigger bills, right, has written in there, this doesn't apply to the mother. So that means it's legal for the mother to order the pills and do the abortion. Hmm. It's not legal for a doctor to do it, but the mom can do it herself. That's totally legal in Alabama and in every state.
So, and really, you know, the situation that happened in Louisiana, so the concept here of the equal protection bill, right? Yeah. And we got a couple of minutes before we go to break, and then we'll come back because we're going to unpack this for the rest of this hour. But the concept of equal protection is that the baby, from the moment of conception, from the moment of fertilization, is life, deserves equal protection and due process under the law. And so it led to this creation of equal protection bill. And the concept behind the equal protection, correct me if I'm wrong, but the concept behind the equal protection bill is that, hey, that this child under, and the argument is made under the 14th Amendment, this child's a person, this child cannot have his or her life taken from them without due process. Right. And there has to be a legal, that child deserves the same legal protections that you and I enjoy. right? And so when that right. when that same bill actually passed out of committee in the mercy and miracle of God in Louisiana a few years ago, it came to the floor of the Louisiana State House. What happened?
Well, 77 major pro-life organizations signed a letter opposing it because they say, no, there needs to be an exception for the mother. It should not be a crime for the mother to abort her own child.
Which is, to me, is an incredible thought process because, it, you know, if the child is a person, then the person deserves protection, right? And so, obviously, you know, and we can get into this later about rape and incest and those things where, well, the way to stop those crimes, right? Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verse 11 says that because sentence is not executed speedily against evil works, the hearts of the sons of men are set to do evil, right? So if you want to stop rape and incest, well, you bring, as it were, the wrath of God upon the heads of those that perpetrate those crimes, and you'll stop that. But the way to solve that problem, really, if you think about even in those situations, if you take the life of the child and you give lax laws and wrist slaps to the perps of the crime, you're actually almost incentivizing or encouraging, or at least you're certainly not stopping that crime from happening in the future. And, you know, it's just an incredible thought that literally a mother, you know, and we'll get into this in the next section. What's the condition of the Alabama homicide law right now? And what does that mean from an actual pro-life perspective? But right now, really what you're saying is that in regards to the mother, the life of the child, at no place in the pregnancy is safe. Is that correct?
That's right. Exactly.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, mind-blowing stuff here. We'll come back here shortly after the break and discuss some more on pro-life, IVF, and how we navigate this path forward. This, after all, is the Right Side Way. We're back. Ernie Yarbrough covering in for Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative and just plain right back on here. And throughout this hour with lawyer Bradley Pierce talking about this issue of equal protection, abortion, pro-life, IVF, where are we at? What's going on? So we just got done talking about the fact that really the state of pro-life after the overturn of Roe v. Wade isn't actually as pro-life as maybe we were hoping it was. Because, you know, the basic position of pro-life, you know, when we send out the flyers of us holding babies and showing things, is that we believe that life begins at conception. And from conception to natural cause of death, life should be protected. Like, it's our responsibility. You know, Proverbs talks about the fact that if you withhold from helping those who are drawn nigh to the grave, who better epitomizes those who can't protect themselves than those in the womb? You know, that moment from the conception, the fertilization, right? Sperm and the egg, the embryo, life in this helpless life. And so we just got done talking about that. What's the state of pro-life right now in our country? It turns out right now, even in the, I believe it's 14 states that have more or less shut down clinics, that chemical abortifacients are wide open. And I want to come to the fact of talking, if you could, Bradley, take a minute to just explain and break down to the people of Alabama the Alabama homicide law, and where are we at with, and what does that do for protecting or not protecting children in the womb?
Yeah, so right now the Alabama homicide law, you know, it says what you would think it does, that, you know, a person commits homicide if they intentionally cause the death of another person, that would be murder. Then it defines personhood actually to include preborn children. Says person means a human being, including an unborn child in utero at any stage of development, regardless of viability.
Right, stop there for a second, yeah. And let that sink in. So you're saying that the Alabama law defines life as any stage of development.
Exactly.
Wow. That's right. All right, go ahead. Let this sink in. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, so there's already basically, you know, what we call personhood in Alabama law and the Alabama homicide law. But then it says this shall not permit the prosecution of any woman with respect to her unborn child. So in other words, there's a specific permission, you know, that's given to the mother of an unborn child that the homicide law does not apply to her with regard to her own unborn child.
So the practical offshoot of this, well, two things. First of all, and we'll get to the IVF discussion. We'll get to that. But so the really the Supreme Court was right, right? The Supreme Court of Alabama was right when they issued the ruling that because of Alabama law defines personhood in life as any stage, right? Their ruling on the IVF was right, right? And it's
absolutely,
and it's consistent with Alabama law.
That's exactly, yeah, and this isn't even the only Alabama. There's a lot to Alabama law and the Alabama Constitution that provides that, you know, that basically, you know, in some, you know, a fetus is a person from any moment. And that's exactly what the Alabama Supreme Court said, that for the purposes of wrongful death statutes, which is suing someone for, you know, even accidentally, you know, or negligently causing someone else's death, they said, hey, that a person is a person. Whether they're born or not born, they're a person. And if someone negligently causes their death, then you can sue for that.
Right. Wow. Wow. So there's that part of the discussion. And then there's this, it's like, it just seems like, wow. So really what this law says in our homicide law is it basically takes the child in the womb, takes it out of the homicide law as far as any protections are concerned, if the person taking the life of the baby is the mama. Am I hearing that correctly?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and it's not even just in the homicide law. Even the in the laws where all the abortion you know, provisions are that shut down all the clinics, there it says, no woman upon whom an abortion is performed or attempted to be performed shall be criminally or civilly liable. So again, it's just kind of a repetition of the same thing. That whether we're talking about the homicide law or the abortion laws, they do not apply to the mother, even if she's intentionally, voluntarily, no one's forcing her, she causes the death, she aborts her own child, there's zero legal liability for her whatsoever.
Now, we're not talking about natural cause of death. We're not talking about, you know, any of those things, miscarriage, you know, and we'll get into a little bit later in the hour, a bill that I filed and that some true pro-life exceptions in there that are not rape and incest, but they're true situations where they're trying, you know, there's life-saving ectopic pregnancy considerations and a couple other things, which we'll unpack that in a minute. But wow, let that sink in. That's the reality of the law. And yet that person is the one person most likely to take the life of the child if there's a desire to. So it's an incredible thought that that's where we are. And if these babies are people, like any other people, we got to do our job to uphold the 14th Amendment and Alabama law and defend all lives as equally protected and precious, because all life is made in the image of God. We'll be right back to continue this topic here on the Right Side Radio. Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, Ernie Yarbrough filling in for Phil Williams, live from the Right Side studio. We got our lawyer friend Bradley Pierce here covering down on pro-life IVF in the state of Alabama. So we've talked about really the state of the law and where we're at, which is just crazy to imagine that the baby in the womb is removed from all protections if the mother taking the life of the child is the mom, but yet she has the baby one day later. If she drowns the baby, takes the life of the baby, there's protections legally for that child because that child's a person. Blow your mind to think about that. Come into this next section. I want to talk about, all right, we're coming up to the IVF discussion. So here's the background. We've set the background to pro-life, post-Roe, tension stresses, these embedded inconsistencies and unresolved tensions in our law. And we come now to IVF. So Bradley, maybe just take a minute for those who don't know what happened and catch them up with what happened in Alabama that led to this IVF discussion that blew up in the state here in the last session.
Yeah, so this spring there was a case that some families had sued an IVF clinic for negligently handling their children, the embryos that they had stored there, and so the case went up to the Alabama Supreme Court to decide, well, hey, can you sue for wrongful death of a child? You know, are these these embryos, are they children or are they just property? And it went up to the Alabama Supreme Court, which ruled, you know, absolutely, these are children. These are human beings, and you can sue for their wrongful death just like you can sue for the wrongful death of any other human being.
So basically, you know, somebody walks into the freezer, opens it up, not supposed to be in there, grabs, you know, embryos and drops them. And then obviously, right. I think it was three families sued because that was their children. Right. And so it goes all the way up. This ruling comes out, which I think was a consistent, righteous ruling, consistent with our law, consistent with what we as legislators, I think, communicate to our constituents when we run for office, that we defend life from conception and fertilization to natural cause of death, because all life is precious, right? It's made in the image of God, and so it should be protected. And so for me as a state legislator, there I was, I didn't grow up. IVF wasn't something that we, you know, test tube babies to IVF. It wasn't something that we, I grew up, like being an expert on. But, in the legislature, we don't have to be experts on everything or we wouldn't pass anything. What we do have to do is make sure to the best of our ability that what's done is done in a legal, righteous, and moral way. Right. And so we kind of got this whole thing thrown into our laps, right? IVF clinics shut down because turns out they're destroying embryos. Right. Not just that there's going to be tremendous liability here, because whether it's what they classify as excess embryos or it's used for research or whatever, there's the intentional destruction of life. Right. And I'm tomorrow hopefully to have on the show here Dr. Joy Riley, the head of bioethics and culture in Tennessee. And she's going to, her whole background as a pro-life doctor with all the letters after her name, co-authored a book, Outside the Womb, talk about a pro-life way to look at IVF. Right. And can it be done? And if so, how? And that'll be a great discussion for follow up for tomorrow, God willing. But so. The IVF clinics in Alabama shut down, right? And then they flood the state capitol because they want legislation passed, right? And so I'm having to study this up real quick, learn as much as I can, as fast as I can. And so the day before we're supposed to vote on this issue, so two pieces of legislation were introduced. And these pieces of legislation give blanket immunity to IVF facilities for the death or destruction of embryos. And I just was like, this is crazy. Like blanket immunity for death and destruction of embryos, which are, it's life, right? And so I'm trying my best. I'm in a conundrum. Like my conscience is on fire. I'm like, God help me. What do I do? Because I'm pro-family, right? I want people to have babies. Obviously, the pro-family message is should be the Republican platform, but even bigger than that, just the American platform. Regardless of your political party, you should be pro-family and pro-life. But, we're not just pro-family. We're pro-family on the basis of being pro-life, right? We're pro-family because we're pro-life, because all and each and every life is precious in the eyes of God, right? So the day before we're supposed to vote on this legislation, this legislation moves through both these, the House and Senate committees, and it gives blanket immunity for death and destruction of embryos. And there's a clause in there that was for 1 year, right? And after a year, we're going to come back and reevaluate, then the idea was to give people who are in the middle of IVF time to get through the process or whatever. Well, in the process of those bills going through committee, that one year window was removed, and it was made blanket immunity forever, right? And so I had all kinds of bells and whistles going off in my head because of the fact that, like, this is a very principled position that the line has to be held. So the day before we're supposed to vote on this, and it was topsy-turvy, tensions were high, knots in our stomachs, and so the IVF folks come down and they bring people, and doctors in these white lab coats are running through all of the rooms talking to people, and I'm listening, and I'm getting ready to engage in conversation because I'm trying to do my best as a legislator to do my job and ask God for help. And so, I hear this, oh, we're pro-family. We want people to have, which of course I am too. So we start to engage in conversation with particularly the doctors in the lab coats, and I said, hey, I'm pro family. I want more babies. Elon Musk is talking about demographics crisis and the lack of children because we've not listened to the message of people like Harrison Butker. We've deprioritized the family. We've deprioritized having children and the work that's involved, but the nourishing fruit of children and the blessing of family. So we're having to wrestle with that. I said, but talk to me about discarding embryo, discarding life, because it's bothering me. It's bothersome to me. And I'm going to answer to God and to my constituents for how I vote and what I say or don't say. And so what they told me blew me away. And so they said, yeah, they said if the parents don't want the embryos, or if we through you know, genetic testing, whatever, determine that these could have potential issues of special needs, Down syndrome, whatever, then we direct which ones are viable or not and discard, destroy, use them for other things. And I was just like, what in the world? I was like, this is eugenics. I just blew my mind what they told me. And then I asked these doctors and lab coats, I said, are you by chance pro-life or pro-choice? Oh, we're pro-choice. And I was like, wow. I mean, it makes sense. The arguments you're making are ones that I've been trained from a child in the context of the Republican movement, where I was knocking doors and spreading literature and sharing the pro-life message. The things that you're saying are the classic arguments that I've heard for the pro-choice movement. You know, and I could not believe what I was hearing. It was obviously super high pressure. All these eyeballs were on Alabama because the Supreme Court had issued what I believe is a righteous ruling about protecting life. And so in wrestling, conundrums, tore up about it. You know, didn't sleep well, and I come to the conclusion that I need to bring an amendment to this bill, and Ben Harrison did too, right? And so the amendment that I ended up bringing was that no immunity shall be granted to any individual who intentionally destroys the life of a preborn child, right? And then Ben Harrison brings an amendment, hey, let's just take this and set it to a side and take 3 months, form a committee, let's study this issue so that we know what we're doing, right? So we get up, I bring the amendment. And I make the point in there, it's kind of funny, I ended up getting put, I think, like the Washington Post and CBS, because I quoted the Bible, Jack Reacher and Vanilla Ice in the same speech. But, you know, I made the comment that Jack Reacher says, you know, in his TV show, in an investigation, details matter, right? And this is a hard issue. It's a difficult issue that we're being thrown into the middle of, that we didn't seek the issue out. It came to us in the providence of God, you know, and I said, you know, not only do details matter in an investigation, but if we don't know what we're doing or we're unsure, and several people told me, you know, I don't really know what to do, how to vote, what to, you know, we're all in this conundrum together. Then yeah, I made the comment from this floor, you know, the First Continental Congress, when they hit a roadblock, they stopped, fasted, and prayed. I said, maybe we should do like James 1, we lack wisdom, ask of God, stop, fast, and pray. You know, or as Vanilla Ice said, stop, collaborate, and listen, so that maybe God wants us to sit in the pause, right, and seek his face for what to do. But that no immunity should be granted to any individual who intentionally destroys the life of a preborn child. Well, that amendment was overwhelmingly shot down, as well as Ben Harris's amendment on, let's just put this to the side and take 3 months. The embryos will keep in the freezer. You know, taking a pause is worth it to make sure that we're not destroying life. We have to get this right. Right. Well, that didn't happen. And it was very, very, very discouraging. And Greg Davis, the head of ALCAP, he actually recorded my speech, played it on his radio show, which comes on after this radio show. And then ended up being that ALCAP, which is the representation for all the Baptist churches in the state, ALCAP, Students for Life, head of the Southern Baptist, API, all these groups wrote a letter to the governor and pled with her to veto that bill. Because it had the potential, because it didn't deal with the root issue, it had the potential to undo all the good, not only of overturning Roe v. Wade, but potentially to undo the good of the laws that have been passed in Alabama that are at least right now preventing some abortions. So I guess maybe just share your thoughts on that process too, and kind of what you observed in this whole situation with that bill.
Yeah, well, I think what you said, you know, talking to those doctors that said, oh, yeah, well, we're actually pro-choice, we're pro-abortion. And unfortunately, when it comes to IVF, you know, a lot of pro-life people, well-meaning people, are not very well, you know, not familiar with it and what really goes on. And so they end up unwittingly, I think, adopting a lot of the pro-abortion talking points. You know, and again, it sounds great to say, yeah, I'm pro-life, you know, I'm all for more babies. Like, hey, listen, you know, my wife and I, we have 11 children. We love babies. Not like this, you know,
right.
We don't do something that intentionally destroys them no matter what. And IVF also, there's so many risky parts of that, you know, there's a whole lot of children lost at every stage. That's extremely risky. Process to go through, and a lot of people just don't know, you know, because they want children, and that's a good thing, right? That's a good desire that they have, and they're not really educated because the people that they're talking to about getting these procedures are pro-abortion themselves, like you said.
Yeah, and it turns out there's a lot of money in that, too. It's extremely expensive. But, yeah. You know, and I was talking to, we'll hopefully talk longer tomorrow, Dr. Joy Riley, but there's a pro-life way to do some of this stuff, but I think it cuts into the bottom line of profit, right, which is, you know, money shows up in a lot of places, you know, but as people, we have, you know, our founding fathers pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, and they can, and you know, William Bradford in Plymouth Plantation said, hey, we're just stepping stones for another generation, right. But we're going to be committed to doing what's right and going about it, the 40-year plan, the 80-year plan, the 100-year plan, because we have to build on a solid foundation. And for me, it's like, you know, you can't make the argument that I'm pro-life, but you know, I heard things like, I heard Republicans say things like, I don't know when life begins, right? In the halls of Alabama legislative debate, I don't know when life begins, right? I just, wow, couldn't believe it. I just was in utter shock. So we got to take a short break here. We'll come back in 5 minutes and wrap up this conversation with lawyer Bradley Pierce, and we'll talk about the remaining parts of IVF and looking forward to the future of the pro-life movement. Ernie Yarrow, we're back here, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right, wrapping up this hour with a few more minutes here with lawyer Bradley Pierce. And so we've talked about the state of pro-life, what's happened post-Roe, crazy IVF situation this past session with legislation, what was brought in there, blanket immunity. And, you know, it was crazy. We got on the floor of the House debating this issue, and we talked about equal protection, right? And we're going to wrap up talking about that moving forward with some legislation for this next session. But, you know, actually, it was a man that I have a lot of respect for, a Democrat representative, a lawyer, Prince Chestnut, and he brought up the point that from the floor, hey, this isn't, he said, this law is going to get overturned. He said, because it's an equal protection issue, right? Because you're saying that children in the womb have all these protections, but children outside the womb are not having protections, right? You get blanket immunity for death and destruction. So you're setting up a 14th Amendment equal protection issue, which I was like, oh my goodness, I've heard of a bill by that name. Oh, that's right. I filed it in my first session. And so it was like deja vu, surreal that here, but this was being debated on the floor, you know, through the providence of God, bringing the issue to us again that we did not seek out, but it was dropped into our laps through, I would argue, the faithful and righteous ruling of the Alabama State Supreme Court. So as we look to the future here and talk about pro-life and IVF and those things, you know, I guess just take a minute, Bradley, what do you see as the future of, you know, again, just reiterate in like a one or two sentences, what does it mean to really be pro-life? And number two, what do we see now as the next step in the future and the iterations for what we should be doing to really stand in the gap in a culture that's a lot? I mean, we see a culture that's boys are girls are boys. You know, you got all these filthy, perverse books in schools and libraries, and you know, a world that, you know, is, you know, upside down. And really, when the Bible talks about the apostles coming in and turning the world upside down, well, it was already upside down. So really, it makes it right side up. So, you know, not allowing people and movements that are so off base and evil to set the terminology of the debate and the discussion. Like, what's our next step from here? And what should we look to as we navigate this in the future?
Well, I mean, I think we need to approach this as Christians, right? And what does Jesus tell us? Second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, right? And when it comes to our laws and how we judge, we're to do that without partiality. And God commands, you shall not show partiality in judgment. So that means we can't judge people differently just based upon whether they're born or whether they're not born. And so we need to have the same laws protect people after they're born, protect them also before they're born. And so that's why that's called abolishing abortion, right? That's, you do that by equal protection. You don't leave, you know, permission for the mother to do it. You abolish it. That's why I call myself an abolitionist, right? Because it's not just that I'm, you know, for life, pro-life, but, like, here's what I want to do about it. I want to actually abolish it, and I think that's what all Christians, that we should all be that.
Right. Yeah, we want to, it's like the slave trade, the abolitionists. It's not that we just want to say we're for life. We want to stop. They wanted to, William Wilberforce wanted to stop people from being trafficked, enslaved, you know, human, right, human chattel slavery. So real quick, I think this is important. Talk about people, if people say, you know, you want to just throw women in jail through trying to discuss this, and also a couple of caveats in the equal protection bill that I filed. Just give a quick synopsis of all that, please.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's not because anybody wants to throw anybody in jail, right? The law isn't because people want to throw people in jail. The purpose of the law is to prohibit or to deter people from committing crimes in the first place, right? So that's what we want. We want, you know, mothers, you know, who are pregnant to take this option off the table where they are deterred from doing it because it's illegal and there are consequences for it. Yeah, that's what we want. You know, some caveats about the bill, you know, the bill is not retroactive. It's not like going after anyone who's had an abortion before the bill would be passed. It's, you know, it's also, obviously, if there's like a medical emergency, you know, then as long as we're not intentionally killing that baby, as long as we're saving as many lives as we possibly can, you know, the bill allows for, you know, doing triage, what doctors need to do to save the mom's life and do everything they can to save the baby's life.
Like, for example, an ectopic pregnancy would be an example.
Exactly.
Yep. And then talk about, too, about duress.
And it doesn't apply to miscarriage.
Sure.
And then it also, like, yeah, it doesn't apply to duress, right? So if a mother or someone's forcing her to do something against her will, obviously it doesn't apply to her as well.
Right, exactly. Just like the other laws that protect people from crimes of duress if they're being forced to, by gunpoint, rob a bank or something or whatever. So there's common sense, true pro-life protections, true to the principle, right? And the goal here, again, as you said, is not to just throw people in jail, but it is to be a deterrent because the law has a pedagogical function, right? It has a teaching function. And a lot of times people will say, well, I can do it because the law says I can. And they think that makes it right. And it doesn't make it right or legal. I mean, we had laws that were for segregation and for slavery, and those didn't make it right. And when we change the law to reflect what was right and good and true, then people's behavior changed. Life was protected, culture of life and families and freedom. Lawyer Bradley Pierce, thank you for helping me for this entire hour tackle this tough topic. Blessings on your labor, brother. We trust that God will indeed make us a free and flourishing state where all life from conception to natural cause of death is protected and valued. That's the right side way.